The next case on the agenda, on the docket, I should say, today is United States versus Darnall. Parties ready? Okay, we'll hear first from the appellant.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Lieutenant Christopher McMahon, and I represent the appellant in this case, Hospitalman Brandon Darnall. Chief Judge Erdman, with your permission, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes rebuttal.
Granted.
Thank you. Your Honors, in this case, CID started a chain of illegality that didn't end until they got the evidence that they were looking for. Agent Pledger came up with a ruse to get Darnall to pick up a fake package, and when he did, Pledger swooped in, illegally apprehended him, and immediately conducted an interrogation. Now, the statements for this interrogation were used as a probable cause basis for the search authorization. And then the second interrogation, which in reality was simply a continuation of the first one, when that happened, he immediately confronted Agent Darnall with the fruits of that search. Your Honors, the chain of illegality in this case was never broken. Before he apprehended Agent Darnall, all Agent Pledger knew was that his name was on a box of suspected contraband with an address a few miles from where he lived. Agent Pledger had never seen Agent Darnall at this address, and he conceded at trial that he didn't know if he had ever even been there. Your Honors, that is simply insufficient to establish probable cause. Now, I'll grant this court that it's probably reasonable grounds to believe that a crime is attempting to be committed. However, not that Agent Darnall committed it.
Well, didn't the Department of Homeland Security, who intercepted this package of drugs, tell the CID that they thought this was a military member, that Darnall was a military member? Is there anything in the record as to what that belief was based on or where it came from?
There is, Your Honor. And I don't have the pin site for you. I believe it might be in my brief. Basically, it was simply the proximity. And the exact language from the testimony, the agent said that since it was at 29 Palms and there's a military installation there, we suspected, and he actually used the word suspected, that there was a good chance that this person was in the military. So then what they did at that point is they contacted CID and they did a search, and then they found out that, yes, in fact, Darnall was stationed there. But they never made the connection, because anybody can put a name on a package, but you have to connect the package with the person. Anything else is just conclusory speculation. But nevertheless, the CCA stretched this meager evidence into the five factors it said demonstrated probable cause. However, when you really sort of parse that out, the last two are relevant, and the first three are insufficient to establish probable cause. Now, one and two indicate that ICE received this package, they intercepted it, and that it was an address to an Agent Darnall who was near at an address near the base. Now, I'll grant you, that's a good jumping-off point for an investigation, but, Your Honors, what that is it's a lead. And what law enforcement has, what they have to do with leads is they need to investigate them. They investigate leads, and then they develop the probable cause that's necessary to apprehend someone. The third factor is that he was one of only three Brandon Darnalls in the San Bernardino County area. Now, that factor is not irrelevant. It's just simply not helpful. It doesn't really matter if he's one of three or one of one. You need to connect the name, this box, this object, with a person. Because, again, anybody can just put a name on a box. Now, four and five, I would suggest, are irrelevant. That Brandon Darnall was the only one of the three who was a service member, that's simply irrelevant. There is nothing on that package indicating a service nexus. And the fact that he was stationed on board the base at 29 Palms, in reality, all that's doing is restating the second factor. So really what we have is factors one and two, that it was a box with his name at an address. Now, this information, the facts known to Agent Pledger at this time, could have supported any number of theories. For instance, that Darnall used his name and sent the package to his old address, which was actually a theory that Pledger had, which turned out to be wrong. It could be that someone was using Agent Darnall's name and had the package sent to their own address, all the better not to get caught. Or that someone was using a fake name and a fake address, or perhaps somebody had an axe to grind with Darnall and just wanted to get him in trouble. Or Darnall was using his name and sent it to someone else's address.
Okay, counsel, Darnall's phone number was on there, wasn't it?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is this a case of lack of probable cause, or is this a case of investigative laziness?
It's both, Your Honor, because all those theories
that I... The phone number's sitting there.
It's sitting right there.
Nobody called the phone number.
Well, that brings me...
No, you know, let's run a gumshoe operation. That's easier than calling the phone number.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, that brings me to the next point. So all of the theories that I just propounded were equally plausible. All Agent Pledger had to do to narrow them down was follow up with the leads that were readily at his disposal, the most obvious of which was the fact that the phone number is on this box. He could have just called it. Maybe he would have picked up. I would like to speak with Agent Darnall. But he didn't.
You keep saying it's H.N. Darnall. Yeah, I realize that. But to me, it sounds like agent.
Fair enough, Your Honor.
Yeah.
So there was that, and that was the most obvious. I mean, that's just sort of right in his face on the package. But he had several other options. He could have tracked down the prior resident, this Nathan LaFond, which he did after the fact, talked to him, and made the necessary connection. He could have called Hospitalman Darnall in for a voluntary interview. Or he could have conducted a legitimate controlled delivery. So this box was addressed to 5985 Mariposa Avenue. So why not deliver it there and then conduct surveillance and see if he goes to pick it up? That's what a real controlled delivery is, and I think that's probably what Agent Pledger was sort of attempting to do, and he just wasn't sure exactly the right way to do it. And I would direct this court to look at United States versus Dickey Bay. It's a Fourth Circuit case, but it really gives a good picture of what probable cause really looks like in a mail-order drug controlled delivery scenario. So he had all those options available to him, but instead, he got the PC, the probable cause that he needed, by ambushing Hospitalman Darnall outside of the mailroom and then taking him back for the interrogation, which continued the chain of illegality in this case. The taint was not removed, and under the Brown attenuation test, each one of those factors weighs in favor of him. So the interrogation happened just moments after this sort of shocking arrest, the surprising arrest. There are no intervening circumstances for the purposes of this analysis. We know that 31 Bravo rights under Brown are insufficient in and of themselves to remove the taint. And this was particularly flagrant, and we don't have to guess at that because Agent Pledger's stated purpose in his operation plan was that he was going to apprehend Agent Darnall and then ascertain how he intended to utilize the subject.
Counsel, was this particularly shocking to the accused at this point because tasers drawn and swooping in and so forth?
I believe it was, Your Honor, and it was sort of a 1-2 punch because he gets this direction to go to the mailroom. And he goes in and he actually says on the video, wow, this is weird. I wasn't expecting a package here. So he gets the package. He's already sort of, I guess, a little vulnerable, sort of off balance. And then he walks out, and in broad daylight in front of the mailroom of the 7th Regiment building, they surround him, taser drawn, federal agents, you know, hands where we can see them, or something to that effect. And, yes, that was particularly shocking, given the circumstances.
And immediately placed in hand irons.
Immediately placed in hand irons. Put in the vehicle and taken back to CID headquarters. And then all his personal effects were taken from him, including his wallet. And then they proceed to have this interview. If the stated purpose of this operation, as he said, well, I'll backtrack for a moment. Agent Pledger said that no matter what had happened, he was going to take him into custody. And if the stated purpose of this operation was to ascertain information, there could be little doubt that it was conducted in this fashion to sort of rattle him and make it easier, make him more pliable, and make him more readily agreeable to talk.
Do you think that was the intent? I mean, I'm not sure there's any evidence that was the intent. Could it just be that they didn't know what to do?
There's nothing specifically saying that that was the intent, and I think Your Honor's point is well taken. I think a large part of it was that he just didn't know what to do. However, it was still purposeful because he said he wanted to get information. And I think whether or not it was done in that startling fashion to make him more pliable, whether that was the purpose, it was certainly the effect. I think
information about like Teddy Grahams and Rich and all these other people in the conspiracy. Where did that all come from? It's not in the statement.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, that brings me to the next link in the chain here because Agent Pledger, and he said this in his testimony, used all the statements that were gained from this first interview to get a search authorization for the phone. He said in his testimony that he didn't have it before he spoke with him. So he used that information, these sort of vague statements that he was importing methadone, as the basis for the probable cause for the search authorization. Now, when he did that, then he finds all these Teddy Grahams and texts from various other people going back and forth. I mean, the lion's share of the evidence is from the search of the phone. That's where all the pictures come from, all the text messages and whatnot. So that's just a straightforward derivative evidence analysis, and we have that from his testimony. He said that he based the probable cause determination on the evidence that he gained from that interview. So that brings us to the third and final link in the chain of illegality, and that's the second interrogation. And as I stated in my opening, this was really just a continuation of the first interview. This was hours, not days or weeks afterwards. He was instructed to come back, and I think very importantly, the agents had taken his phone. I mean, he had to come back. And then when he comes back hours later, and by the way, Your Honor, he knows what's on his phone. He knows what he's already said, and he's coming back into this situation, and the first thing that Agent Pledger hits him with is, so what do you want to tell me about what I found on your phone? And this was before any rights, and that sort of goes along with the idea that this was all one continuous interview. So he sort of hits him right in the face with that, and he would not have had a basis to ask that question if not for the illegal search of the phone, which was precipitated by the information from the first interview. The bottom line is, throughout the beginning, first interview, search authorization, second interview, Agent Pledger did not do anything independent from the initial illegality to get the evidence against Agent Darnell. The chain, Your Honors, was never broken. One last point I'd like to make involves the exclusionary rule. As this court well knows, the exclusionary rule is meant to deter police misconduct. Now, it doesn't really work very well for sort of innocent, honest mistakes, because those are usually one-offs that probably won't happen again. It's more for deliberate police conduct or misconduct. And I would suggest that that has particular relevance in a case like this, because the military, each of the services, rely heavily on our service law enforcement agencies. And while we ask these agencies to do everything that civilian law enforcement do, they don't necessarily always have the training or the experience necessary or the guidance. However, the same constitutional principles apply to the service members, and they have a right to have those protected and to be treated fairly during these investigations. So, Your Honors, if there was a case where this court could sort of instruct these agencies on how to properly conduct investigations, I submit that this would be the one.
So well, we're not in that business, are we? Instructing the agents how to conduct investigations?
Well, I guess I'll just put it in terms of deterring them from doing something like this, Your Honor. So I'll step it back just a little bit.
I don't think anybody here has any law enforcement experience, do they?
Not the right kind.
It just seems to me, Your Honor, that the steps were missed. And
well, let me go back to your exclusionary rule point. I think what you're suggesting is that maybe in an egregious enough case that there is as much an intrusion upon the Fourth Amendment rights of the accused as there would be with an intentional or flagrant violation. Is that kind of what you're
on? Okay. And again, this too many steps were skipped here, and this is, I'll say charitably, somewhat lazy police work. And this is the type of police work that should be deterred. So I will just conclude, Your Honor, the government can't guess at.
Before you get there, can you specifically address inevitable discovery?
Yes, Your Honor. So with the inevitable discovery, the key point there is that the government agents possess or actively pursuing evidence or leads that would have inevitably led to the evidence. That just doesn't apply in this case because I think the government asserts that, well, they would have talked to Mr. LaFond eventually, and then they would have gotten a probable cause from that conversation to search the phone, and then the whole can of worms would have been revealed. I dispute that because he talked to them or talked to Mr. LaFond maybe a week later. There is just no way to know that the same phone that Agent Darnell has on his person is going to be with him in a week, and that once he knows all this is going on, that he's not going to erase everything on that phone. I think the inevitable discovery analysis is more apt for a case like this court's decision in Owens. Now, that was a case where the police or law enforcement were already looking through the car. They saw stereo equipment that looked like it was stolen, and then he had probable cause. Then he revoked the consent, and he kept going. Well, now the police, once they have probable cause of stolen items like that, are not going to just stop. So that really was a good case of inevitable discovery. Here, it's simply speculation to suggest that his subsequent conversation with LaFond is going to lead to this evidence.
Do you have anything more to say on the good faith exception? I take it your earlier comments were directed towards that.
Your Honor?
I take it that your earlier comments were directed toward the good faith exception, that these guys weren't acting in good faith and they shouldn't get the benefit of that.
Your Honor, it's simply the wrong analysis. The good faith exception is when there's a mistake on a warrant or the police are acting on a warrant that doesn't have probable cause but they think it does. That's separate and aside. It's not based on initial illegality. The derivative evidence doctrine is there's an illegality and it flows from that. It's just simply not the right analysis, Your Honor. So, Your Honor, in conclusion, the government just simply cannot guess at what the facts are to establish probable cause in a case. And the government certainly cannot be rewarded for a constitutional violation after the fact because they happen to guess right. And that's exactly what happened in this case. So therefore, Hospital in Barnell asked this court to suppress the two interviews as well as the search of his phone. Barring any further questions, that concludes my presentation.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
You'll have additional time on rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The court will now hear from the government.
Good morning, Chief Judge Erdman, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Major Corey Carver, and along with Colonel Valerie Danilick on behalf of the United States. This court should affirm the findings and sentence here for two reasons. First, there was probable cause to apprehend appellant. And second, regardless, if you look at the non-flagrant official misconduct here under the Brown factors, appellant's two statements are admissible. As to appellant's apprehension, this court should look at the reasonableness of that apprehension and whether based upon the totality of the circumstances, Agent Pledger believed or reasonably believed that an offense was committed and appellant had committed the offense. Appellant here is, although in his brief he argued that there was no offense committed, no probable cause for the offense, here he concedes that issue. And so as to who committed that offense, we can excise the erroneous fact that the military judge relied upon, which was tying appellant specifically to the residence as to him living in that residence, and then analyze it based upon the probable cause that was known at the time.
Counsel, in the record at JA 200, the trial counsel made the following argument to the military judge. Quote, the government's position is, if we look at case law and probable cause to apprehend, just the accused name in association with a controlled substance alone gets probable cause. You have probable cause for all three Brandon Darnells. Is that the government's position here today?
No, Your Honor.
And how does your argument in your brief distinguish between the position that the government was taking at the court-martial and the position the government is taking here today?
Your Honor, it's not solely because it was addressed to Brandon Darnall. He was the sole Brandon Darnall at 29 Palms. If there had been two or three at 29 Palms, then that would be closer to a reasonable suspicion. However, because the address on the package was 29 Palms, it was addressed to a
He wasn't at the address.
Sorry, Your Honor?
He wasn't at the address.
Correct, Your Honor.
I'm in Reno County, Kansas. I'm the only Scott Stuckey in Reno County, Kansas. Does they give him probable cause to search my house?
No, Your Honor, not to search your house. However, if there's a package that's intercepted that's addressed to that particular city and you're the sole person with that name, then there would be probable cause.
I didn't say that particular city because it wasn't addressed to where he was. All you got is a name and a package and a phone number that law enforcement totally failed to follow up on. And it looks to me like you took the easy way, not you guys, but law enforcement, the investigative agency, took the easy way out and said, oh boy, we can do a fake package rather than just dialing the phone number.
Correct, Your Honor. Of course, the United States concedes that there were investigative steps that could have happened, but all that's required is probable cause.
All it required is probable cause, and all you've got is a package addressed to some guy, and a guy who's not where the package is. How's that probable cause?
Because the package was addressed to an address in 29 Palms, which is an isolated city with a Marine Corps installation there.
So is it your, is the government's position that if there were three Brandon Darnells in 29 Palms, law enforcement had probable cause to arrest, to apprehend all three of them?
No, Your Honor. That
Why
would
not?
Be, that would start to get to a little bit more diluted evidence connecting it to the specific appellant in this case. But that's not what happened here. Although there was two other Brandon Darnells in San Bernardino County, which was, which is the size of Connecticut, this was an isolated city, addressed to 29 Palms. Also, the military judge made a finding of fact here. One
so
other
people with common names are at a distinct benefit when it comes to law enforcement investigations as compared to people with unique names?
But potentially, Your Honor, but there was also a nexus to the Marine Corps installation here. The military judge made a finding of fact.
So if someone lives in Quantico, they must be a Marine?
No, Your Honor. However, if it's if the package does come into Quantico and there's one Brandon Darnall in Quantico and it's addressed to him, to a separate address, but it's coming to Quantico, then yes. But the military judge here specifically made a finding of fact that the person living at the address, that was known, that he was a corpsman stationed at the Marine Corps installation in 29 Palms prior to the apprehension.
So just so I want to make sure I understand your point. So if there is a Marine stationed aboard Quantico and there is a package delivered to a person with X name, even though the address is completely wrong, as long as it's delivered to an address in Quantico, there's probable cause to apprehend that Marine.
That's the sole person with that name, yes, that's the United States position. So bringing it back to a different hypothetical, I work at the Navy Yard. My name's Corey Carver, and if there was a package that contained evidence of a crime that arrived at the Navy Yard, and I'm one of 2,000 or 3,000 people that work there, and if I was the sole Corey Carver and it arrived at a different building, then there would be probable cause to apprehend me. Probable cause is less than 50% likely, something more than reasonable suspicion.
Counsel, let me follow up on something you said earlier. You said that the military judge made a specific finding that there was a Navy corpsman who was living at that address. Where in the record does it show that Agent Pledger knew that before the apprehension?
Joint Appendix 108 and 126, Your Honor. Agent Pledger specifically at the first 39A session testifies that he knew that prior to. Subsequent at the either, I believe it was at another 39A or maybe at trial, he states that he believes that he knew that. But prior to that, and the military judge makes a finding, and this is reviewed, his findings of fact are reviewed under the clearly erroneous standard.
How do we know he knew that? Is there anything in the record that indicates where he got that information? Because later on, of course, he said that if Darnell hadn't admitted that he was importing the drugs for human consumption, the investigation would have sunk at that point and not been continued.
Your Honor, he had discovered the name, Mr. LaFond, associated with that address prior
on
to
the phone, right?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Did he get the name from the phone?
No, Your Honor. Actually, Mr. LaFond was discovered through a search of the address, and Mr. LaFond came up. That was an independent investigation that was going on at the same time as the probable cause to apprehend the appellant.
Had the appellant already been apprehended when they gumshoed into the Lister LaFond?
When they actually interviewed him, yes, Your Honor. However, his name and who he was known prior to.
Was known prior to
the apprehension.
The apprehension of the accused.
Correct, Your Honor. And that's a military judge's finding of fact at Joint Appendix 452 and 53, and that's based upon the evidence in the record.
In the, investigation plan or controlled delivery plan, which I guess is at Joint Appendix 662, it talks about H.N. Darnell and that he used to live at Mariposa Avenue and that he's moved into 29 Palms, to the barracks of 29 Palms. How did they know that?
Your Honor, that was a mistaken belief by Agent Pledger. You can surmise from the record that that was an assumption that he was making because of the address that was on there.
So an assumption, it was a fabrication?
No, Your Honor. It could, a reasonable inference that since Mr. LaFond was connected and a corpsman in at 29 Palms and appellant was a corpsman, he assumed at that point that it was.
In that affidavit, he didn't say, "I'm assuming." He said, "This is a fact."
Correct, Your Honor. Correct, Your Honor. However, that was something that he believed, and the military judge unfortunately believed and made that finding a fact. It's clearly wrong.
But believed that it was the accused's former address.
Correct, Your Honor.
And that was incorrect.
Correct, Your Honor.
And don't you think that that's a rather important fact in terms of whatever probable cause you have, which is that they believed it was his former address? I mean, that's the only thing that connects that name, that person, to the package in any way, shape, or form other than the name.
Yes, Your Honor, it's clear that he did believe that. However, this court can excise that fact, just like the lower court did, and still come to the conclusion, and based upon the totality of the circumstances, that there's probable cause.
But other than the name, there's nothing left.
Well, Your Honor, the name as well as the fact that it was addressed to 29 Palms, and he was the sole Brandon Darnall at 29 Palms, as well as that Mr. LaFond was a corpsman connected to
29. I
thought they didn't find out about that person until later. No, Your Honor. Agent Pledger did testify that he knew that prior to the apprehension, and the military judge made that finding a fact. It's not clearly erroneous. So this court can consider that as one of the many facts.
Would you have had probable cause to arrest every corpsman at 29 Palms?
No, Your Honor.
Because they were all corpsmen?
No, Your Honor. That would get closer to more of a reasonable suspicion if you take away the name.
It would have been reasonable to suspect every corpsman at 29 Palms?
No, Your Honor.
That gives me the willies.
I'm confused about the connection between these two individuals. Like, what was the connection other than that they're corpsmen?
That was one of the smaller points, but that was a point that connected that house, at least, to the base.
I'm talking about the two corpsmen.
Correct, Your Honor.
What connects them?
I mean, other than they being corpsmen connected to Marine Corps installation there in Quantico, in 29 Palms, nothing. At least that wasn't known at the time. Of course, the independent investigation that took place where they tracked down Mr. LaFond and spoke to him, obviously they made even more of a connection. But simply understanding that you need evidence beyond a reasonable doubt at trial, so the investigation continues after the fact, and looking at what Agent Pledger knew at the time, there was probable cause to apprehend him, even though he continued the investigation subsequent to the apprehension.
Counsel, why isn't it a reasonable inference that Pledger was engaged in his own little shock and awe campaign here in terms of the circumstances surrounding the apprehension of Darnall? Here, he says he wants to see his reaction when he receives the package. His reaction is not one of, "Good, I've got the package." It's one of surprise by Pledger's own testimony. And then the way that the apprehension goes down is in a public space, three law enforcement officers, taser drawn, puts him into hand irons immediately and whisks him away. Why doesn't that go to the point that concern expressed by the Supreme Court about essentially seeking to rattle an accused to cause them to give up the ghost when it comes to admitting conduct?
For two reasons, Your Honor. First, there's no evidence directly on that point as far as that he was rattled in the initial statement, as well as Agent Pledger testified that the sole purpose was to gauge the reaction to obtaining the package, not a shock and awe campaign.
So how then does that help when we have Darnall being surprised by the receipt of this package?
Well, Your Honor, he was surprised that the package, you could look at that from two different angles. Surprised that the package was at the command deck because it was addressed to a different address where he was expecting it, or surprised that the package maybe wasn't his. So from it, neither inculpatory or exculpatory evidence was derived from that quote-unquote controlled delivery because it was anything but. It really produced no evidence. Agent Pledger didn't rely upon any of the evidence produced from that because there was nothing. The military judge didn't either.
So based on that, as soon as a mischievous person sends a package with contraband to someone they don't like at an address that is not the person's, law enforcement doesn't even have to do this charade of a controlled delivery. Law enforcement can immediately swoop in a public place, tasers drawn, put on handcuffs, and whisk the person away. that's what we're going to tell our service members?
Your Honor, if there's probable cause based upon the facts that you just laid out, then the apprehension, as Agent Pledger testified, was within the standard operating procedures of CID. The taser was not drawn and pointed at the appellant. There was no shock and awe in that particular regard, but the taser was drawn just in case appellant tried to escape or had a weapon or something like that.
I don't think we're talking about the procedures of the apprehension. I think we're talking about the fact that there was an apprehension based on what they knew at that time.
Well, Your Honor, the apprehension, if it's based on probable cause, it would, as long as it follows the procedures, whether it did rattle the appellant or not is not relevant to that analysis. The probable cause would be based upon what Agent Pledger knew at the time, and we've already rattled through what he knew at the time. If this court decides that that's not enough probable cause for the apprehension, then the exclusionary rule still should not apply to appellant statements, and because, first of all, there's no question that the statements made by the appellant in his initial statement as well as the second statement were voluntary, satisfying the Fifth Amendment. However, if there is a Fourth Amendment violation here, it has to be sufficiently voluntary to attenuate the taint. And so we're talking about whether there's coercion, and that would play into that fact, Your Honor, as far as if he was rattled, if that was the purpose. However, the three factors in Brown, temporal proximity between the apprehension and the statement, the presence of any intervening circumstances, and whether there was flagrant official misconduct. Now, I'd like to address the third factor because it does apply to both the initial as well as the second statement, and then I can circle back and address those first two factors of Brown as applied to the initial statement and second statement. So looking at that third Brown factor, whether there was flagrant official misconduct, meaning whether there was constitutional violation, was purposeful. The cases highlight that third factor. You have Brown and Conklin on one hand, where investigators, without evidence connecting the crime to the appellant, illegally obtained some evidence in order to make that connection, and then based upon that illegally derived evidence, made the arrest or the apprehension in those cases. Whereas on the other hand, you have Strife and Kamsuk, as well as this case, where the evidence that connected appellant to the crime was legally obtained, and even though it wasn't sufficient to get past that threshold of probable cause, the courts emphasized the lack of flagrancy there because it wasn't a situation where there was no evidence at all that linked the crime to the appellant.
Well, flagrancy or laziness. You know, I circle back to the fact that all I had to do was call him, and then you might have had click. You might not, but, you know, it just seems like it just blew it off.
Or Your Honor, in another hypothetical situation, call the phone number during the controlled delivery that's on the package and see who shows up. And so, yes, there could have been steps that could have been taken to develop more evidence. However, Agent Pledger did believe, based upon at least one false aspect, meaning that the appellant had lived at that address, he believed he had probable cause for the apprehension.
Well, I don't care whether he believed it. I mean, all that goes to is good faith, and good faith really isn't relevant here. I care about whether there is probable cause.
Your Honor, that does also go to the flagrant official misconduct, whether there was a purposeful mistake.
Well, and I'm not saying there is flagrant official misconduct so much as flagrant laziness.
Do you not think it's at all problematic that they changed where the package went? I mean, it had an address on it, and instead they redirected it to the place that they knew that he was and had caused him to come pick it up.
Yes, Your Honor. The controlled delivery is did not derive any evidence. There's no exculpatory evidence that came from that.
That's when they apprehended him.
Correct, Your Honor. They did apprehend him immediately thereafter, but they...
I mean,
the
purpose of apprehending him was because they thought that he was receiving a controlled substance, right?
Correct, Your Honor, but it...
The package, which was supposed to go to Mariposa Avenue, instead they directed to go to the base.
Correct, Your Honor. However, it wasn't because he obtained the package at the command deck that they arrested him, or apprehended him, excuse me.
It was because of what was supposedly in the package.
Correct, Your Honor. The crime, and as well as the name. But assuming we're getting to the Brown factors, there would have to be the violation. There would have been the apprehension without probable cause. And so when you're talking about the flagrancy, we've moved past whether there's probable cause or not. if this court disagrees that there's probable cause for the apprehension, the court would look at those three factors. And one of the highlighted factors from the Supreme Court, as well as this court, is that flagrancy, whether there was flagrant official misconduct. Because the whole purpose of the exclusionary rule, according
to... I'm asking you why it's not flagrant official misconduct to take a package that was supposed to go to one place and direct it to another place. Like, where is the authority for that?
Talking about a violation of federal law in order to intercept the package and send it to the command deck, Your Honor?
No, I'm just asking you, like, where did that come from? Whose great idea was that?
That was Agent Pledger's, unfortunately. And again, the controlled delivery could have been done better, as Judge Stuckey has stated. They could have called the phone number. They could have delivered it to the house. They could have done a lot of things in that controlled delivery. This is a red herring that really produced nothing.
Well,
it got him arrested. It
produced everything. That's what they're using to connect him to the package, and they're the ones that set it up. They directed him to come and pick it up.
No, Your Honor, they're not using any evidence derived from that controlled delivery, quote-unquote, to
apprehend him. It's why they arrested him.
No, Your Honor, they arrested him because they had probable cause based upon the package, not where it was delivered, not the whole controlled delivery, quote-unquote, that was really poorly done. It was because they had the probable cause.
Okay, let's say that the package went to Mariposa Abbott, just went there. What would they have arrested him for?
It would have been arrested based upon his name, and based upon that would have been an extra evidence, which was he showed up to that address.
If he showed up. He hasn't showed up to the address.
Correct.
The package goes to Mariposa,
and it
he's
sits
on
there.
The base. They call him, and can they arrest him?
In that particular, they had probable cause prior to doing the controlled delivery. The controlled delivery would have.
The controlled delivery didn't happen.
Yes, Your
Honor. Okay, in my alternate universe, the package went where the U.S. Mail said it should go, to Mariposa Avenue. Okay? Can they just go and arrest him?
Yes, Your Honor, because they believe they had probable cause based upon the name on the ad.
Based on the name on the package.
The crime inside the package.
The package had stuff in it, that alone.
Correct, Your Honor. Okay. They did not have to do a controlled delivery check.
Okay, so the package goes to this house that he has never lived. And it just sits there. He doesn't go pick it up. It's the government's position that you got probable cause based solely upon his name.
Depending on how long it sits there, Your Honor,
I think, in the alternate universe, that it sits there for some length of time, picks it up.
That would be a factor, Your Honor, that this court should weigh in determining whether there's probable cause, but this is based upon the totality of the circumstance.
Well, no, I'm asking you, if the package goes to where it's supposed to go, it hasn't been tinkered with, it sits there on the porch, because nobody's living in the house. The accused has never lived in the house. Is there probable cause?
First arrives, yes, Your Honor.
Probable cause gradually deteriorates as the package sits there?
That would be a factor that this court could consider, that it sat there for 6 months or a year or 10 years and nobody picked that up. If it sat there for 10 years, that would be a factor that this court should look at in deciding whether there's probable
Except
cause.
San Bernardino County trash control.
But it's the United States position that there was probable cause based upon the name, based upon the fact that it was a 29 Palms address. He was the sole Brandon Darnall in 29 Palms. That's what Agent Pledger believed he had probable cause for that. If there is not probable cause, there's no flagrant official misconduct here. Under the Brown factors, that initial statement, because there's no flagrant misconduct, because there were at least some intervening circumstances at that initial statement. When appellant made the statement, he had already been advised of his 31 Bravo rights. Now, Brown says that the Miranda rights aren't sufficient enough as an intervening circumstance, but that's not all we have here as an intervening circumstance.
Counsel, I see your time has expired. You may briefly conclude.
Thank you, Your Honor. So based upon that, there was probable cause for the apprehension, and regardless, there was no official flagrant misconduct, and under the Brown factors, appellant's two voluntary statements, and the United States will rely upon its brief, should come in, were admissible, the exclusionary rule should not apply. Thank you.
Thank you. Rebuttal.
Very briefly, Your Honor. There is one point which I think it's very important to clarify. Granted, this record is convoluted. It took me a very long time to thread through sort of what was the case here with this Mr. LaFon, but I would just clarify that because it's an important point. Initially, during the motion to suppress, he said something to the effect of, well, since another corpsman used to live there, I thought he probably had it delivered to his address. But what's very important to know is that at trial, he was pressed on that. And they said, well, wait a minute, did you know about him before you interviewed, the first interview, or after? And he conceded, well, actually, I'm not sure. I had a lot going on then. And I think the most telling part is that during the interrogation, the second interrogation, he never, Agent Pledger, makes one mention of this Nathan LaFond to Agent Darnell, saying, hey, do you get packages delivered? What's the deal? Are you guys friends or anything? No mention is made. And the CCA actually addressed that in footnote 6 of their decision. They indicate that his search uncovered a Navy corpsman, but CID agent never asked appellant about the corpsman during the post-apprehension interviews, so it is likely CID agent did not possess this information until sometime after the appellant's arrest. So I think the record clearly shows he didn't know about Nathan LaFon. So again, the only connection is the name on the box. Thank you.
So that fact is clearly erroneous, nothing by the military judge?
I believe it is, Your Honor, yes. And, I mean, I would ask you to just show deference to the lower court's decision. I mean, they did not find that happened. So I'd ask this court to make the same finding. Barring any further questions, that concludes my presentation.
I do have one question, Chief. What about the government's position that on the exclusionary rule that you have to have purposeful, flagrant conduct in order to
I would dispute
avoid this exclusionary rule.
I would say more that's conduct that can be modified and that can be conformed. So I'm not sure that the motives is certainly a part of it, but if it's something that's sort of a systemic mode of doing business that can be changed, that can be deterred, I think that would go into the analysis as well, and I think that would apply here. Thank you.
Okay, the court thanks counsel for both parties. The case is now submitted. The court will be in recess until further order of the court.
All rise. Court is adjourned until further order of the court.